Excuse me, I do need to inform all parties that today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. Thank you.
Could we have our roll call of who's here?
Certainly, Alan. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, everybody. We have on the call today Tatiana Kramsova.
Kramsova, yes.
Kramsova, excuse the pronunciation. Michael Nilon, Glenn McKnight, Mike O'Connor, Cheryl Langdonore, Mike Pelage, Mason Cole, James Bladell, Barry Cobb, Alan Greenberg, Garth Bruin, Paul Diaz, Michael Young, Matt Serlin, and Philip Corwin. And we have some other participants on the Adobe Connect. We have got Srishka Brahmanian, Matthew Sami from on the Adobe Connect, and we have got Sergey Gorbunov, who is not on the call but on the Adobe Connect. And for staff, we have Marika Koenix, William McKellicott, Margie Malam, and Glenn de Saint-Jury. Have I left off anybody? Either from the Adobe Connect or from the call. I think that's everybody then, Alan.
We're not using the voice bridge on the Adobe Connect, are we?
No.
I assume not. So anyone on Adobe Connect only is only going to see what documents we have or what goes on in the chat. I'll make an editorial comment first. I wish we could have the kind of participation we've had in the last two or three hours on the email list throughout the rest of the intermeeting gaps. We would make a lot more progress if we did. However, that as it may, the first item on our agenda, which I thank Marika for preparing, is the definitions. And the prime definition that we're talking about is what do we call the what I was defining as a new definition of the original domain holder registrant, and that Michael sent around a more precise but more complex expression. And I guess I'd like to hear how do we want to do this. I'm a little bit worried that if we don't carefully define this, we're going to use terms in ad hoc ways and never be quite sure that we know what each other are talking about or the documents are saying. At the same time, I'd like something that's short enough that we actually use it and don't generate new abbreviations of it on an ad hoc basis. Mike, you sent in the other comment other than mine. Do you want to speak to it, and then we'll take other comments?
I think I just did another proposal. I appreciate the long-windedness. So did you see, I think my abbreviated term was registrant at expiration, and then I defined it in my more long-winded term. So registrant at expiration would be a good way of, I mean, that's what we're focusing on. What are the rights or interests that we're trying to protect of the registrant at expiration?
Yeah.
So is that short enough for you?
It's short. It doesn't particularly flow when we're talking. Let's have some other comments. I don't want to be the only one to criticize your hard work. Is there anyone else who cares?
Well, Cheryl here, Alan,
yep.
Yes, I certainly care because all of this has to be interpretable in many ways beyond this group. I think it is important that we have clearly defined nomenclature that we're using and is understandable and doesn't allow ourselves to be confused, let alone others who are reading the work. I think at expiration works fine for me, and we can make it a set of letters in the good ICANN tradition? Does it clash with anything else? Does RAE or whatever is decided upon conflict or confuse or could be confused with any other set of terminologies, though?
Not that I'm aware of. Does anyone object to using registrant at expiration or the pronounced acronym RAE or RAE? Using the three interchangeably?
I think it's but Michael. No. I think we should settle on one. If we use three interchangeably, it'll get
confusing. Just one would be better.
I just have a problem that we're, if we use the three words, some people will end up abbreviating it.
Well, and nature says if it's going to be abbreviated, let's use a proper, admit that it's going to be abbreviated in documentation. You start it in full, put RAE in brackets, and
okay.
Then
so RAE pronounced as the letters will be what we'll use.
I like that. I think it's clear.
Okay.
We have a ray of sunshine.
Hey, we've actually made a decision.
I'm happy. And then, as I said, what we'll do is when we use ray, we'll just define it then with...
You see, you just pronounced it ray, not R-A-E.
R-A-E, I'm sorry. R-A-E.
Thank you for reinforcing my point.
I had cray on the brain.
I'm a little worried that RAE will be interchangeably thought of when people read it with RAA.
Oh, look, we can't.
We can't.
You know.
We can't help everyone. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. May I suggest RAE or RAE, whichever this organism ends up using generally as an abbreviation for registrant at expiration.
If that's the beast we're trying to protect, yes.
Okay. And let's not legislate how one pronounces the acronym and let's see what evolves.
Well, put it this way. It's been nearly 6 years I've been asking people, do they remember how to spell A-U-D-A, because that's what we're called, not outer.
On the other hand, I've never heard anyone try to pronounce R-A-A. Rah. Okay. The next item on the agenda was update on data gathering from ICANN, compliance, registrar, liaison team, ombudsman, and whoever else may have complaints. Do we have William on the call? I didn't hear his name.
So, yes, I'm on the call.
Okay.
So, I assume that all of you read the email I sent out to the list, and so I shared the most up-to-date number of complaints that we have received at ICANN for the different categories, and so kind of delving into the transfer category and then doing more of a mining of the text included in the complaints revealed that, you know, to my point, I guess, that even though there's a category for redemption, depending on what angle the complainant is taking on his complaint and trying to identify it, there could be, if you will, some level of confusion as to what the exact nature of the problem is. So these categories, because they're self-reported, are only as good as the person making the complaint is knowledgeable of what he or she is complaining about and his or her understanding of how that problem came to be. That's my read into this. Certainly it's up to the group to interpret what they are reviewing as well.
Okay. Just this a clarification, on the transfer ones, you don't have any breakdown on how many are just plain transfer issues and how many are transfer post-expiration?
We don't have that breakdown. No, we don't.
Okay.
And William, this is Mike Pelage. With domain name renewal, it's also possible that someone who was trying to renew but didn't do it in a timely fashion but then fell into some type of redemption grace period, it's also possible in self-identification they themselves could perhaps identify this as a domain name renewal problem as well. Is that possible based upon your experience?
That is possible.
Okay.
Well, I mean, there's almost no end to where what people could have classified them as. It could have been a reseller problem.
Yeah, I think so. It will be because a lot of our clients, Tatiana Hamsol from the center, a lot of our clients have some complaints regarding reseller agreement and renewal problems.
Excuse me, Muthusami is joining.
Yeah,
it's Tatiana.
I mean, these statistics, as they stand, don't tell us a lot. I suspect at least some number of people who are looking at the problem, who are experiencing the problem that we're looking at, would report this as a problem because they suddenly go into Whois and find someone else's name on a domain. So we're not going to learn a lot from these raw statistics, I'm afraid.
Well, I don't disagree with you on that, Alan, but I do think what William has done here, which is important, is at least provide a initial threshold to validate some of the anecdotal concerns, or at least show that there's a basis for some of the anecdotal concerns that form the basis of the original ALAC request. Because if we came back and we saw a bunch of zeros, we would then be in a situation of, well, you know, did the ALAC was the ALAC really listening to its constituents? Here, I think we do appear to have some basis to say, yes, concerns that have been expressed in the original ALAC issues report, as well as some of the anecdotal issues that I think Tatiana was raising, shows that, yes, you know, what we're doing is the right thing, because I think, you know, Mason, we've had this discussion back and forth, you know, are we trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist? I think that's the one issue that you've raised, and I think we've at least cleared this initial threshold that what we're doing is justified and we need to continue to move forward. At least that's my assessment on this initial work that William had put together for us, and I appreciate it.
Well, Mason here. I mean, obviously, I disagree a bit, Mike. I disagree in two ways. One is, in raw numbers, if you take the number of complaints that have been lodged with ICANN and you divide that by the number of registrations, the level of the problem is minuscule, just using raw numbers. The second thing is, as has been pointed out, we don't know what's underneath those numbers that William reported, and you know how many of those in fact were resolved to the satisfaction of the complainer, and you know, was the complainant the affected party or was it someone else? I fundamentally disagree that I mean, as an operating registrar, you know, I can tell you that the majority of complaints that we get, we are able to resolve favorably on behalf of the customer. So, you know, looking at number of complaints alone, it's probably misleading. Looking at number of complaints against number of domain names registered worldwide, not statistically significant in my estimation.
Well, this is Garth Bruin, and if I could just oppose that a little bit. The issue is about when domain names expire. Not every domain name expires. You know, I think that we need to look at this particular population. You can't compare it to the general population of all domain names worldwide.
Well, okay, even if you shorten that number a bit, again, you know, what is the actual extent of the problem? The fact is we just don't know. We don't know. I don't think there's any way to responsibly say that we have an idea about how significant this problem, if there is a problem, really is.
Mason, taking the devil's advocate role, as Alan, how would you suggest that these numbers, we could get such evidence, given that in an email you sent earlier today, you pointed out that registrars are not likely to very actively participate in this kind of thing, and as was discussed at the workshop in Sydney, registrars are likely to be the ones who receive the first lines of complaint, and they're the ones with some measure of understanding of if there's a problem or not. Well, so we're in a catch-22 of how do we get the information.
Well, that suggests that there's an extent of a problem being experienced by registrars that is greater than what the anecdotal evidence shows. And I would not make that assumption. I think by virtue of the fact that there's not, you don't see the a public outcry about about all this. I mean, anecdotally, yes, you see once or twice somebody forgets to renew a name and makes a, you know, makes a big deal out of it, and that's understandable. But to believe that registrars are seeing more of that than is actually being publicly reported, I think is not correct. So, I mean, that's my whole point, Alan, frankly, is because you don't see anything beyond the anecdotal, I don't believe there really is anything beyond the anecdotal.
And I see no way of trying to convince you of it otherwise, regardless of what the underlining facts are, and neither of us actually know.
Well, yeah, I'm not trying to be combative, but you know, if there is more than I can see as an operating registrar, I'm willing to have a look at it. I just don't, in my experience as a registrar, there just is not that level of problem. Now, you know, one thing that you and I discussed in Sydney, or at least was discussed in the Sydney workshop, was that resellers are a big source of problem, and I'm not educated enough on that channel to know what exactly has been experienced in terms of resellers creating a problem. If that's true, then I'd love to hear more about it, but I haven't heard anything more than that.
I hear other people trying to talk but not getting through.
Alan, there's some people as well in the queue on the Adobe Connect.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I haven't paid attention to that.
And maybe that's a good tool to ensure that everyone gets in the queue and raises their hand in that way to avoid people speaking through each other.
All right, we have Tatiana.
Yeah, I have one question. Do you have such statistics for different regions of Ascend present? Because I think that, for example, in Russia, our registrars use their own models, as they use for .ru.sh domains, and for example, we have no much problems with transfers, but with resellers and other GTLD, we have a lot. So I think that for different regions, there are different pictures for this issue.
Yeah, I think the for the CCTLDs, the experience is relevant, that if indeed there aren't, then we need to perhaps look at what the differences are. Of course, any policy we're looking at only applies to GTLDs, but how other CCTLDs have implemented things is certainly relevant.
But I mean that our registrars try to use model for CCTLD to GTLD. Because they start to work with .ru, and then they got accreditation and GTLD, different GTLD, and put this model to GTLD. It's the main problem, I think.
Okay, thank you. James?
Sorry, a little slow on the mute button there. Thank you, Alan. And I just wanted to, I think it was incorporated somewhat in Mason and Tatiana's comments, but I just wanted to point out that this part of the conversation is possibly setting up to bog down, and we should once again maybe take a step back, take a look at how to quantify the problem of the harm to registrants that is presented by the existing both existing policies and existing practices, and then look for ways to obtain that information. And while I thought Mike's proposed questions were very comprehensive, I think that any attempt to survey registrars will be voluntary in terms of their participation, and I don't know that that's going to be a thorough or comprehensive basis of data to inform this group. I mean, I would certainly love a peek behind the curtain at Mason's operation, and I'm sure that he would like that as well, but I think that we're going to have some reluctance in terms of participation in registrars, and that's not a nefarious statement. That's just what happens when you have a group of competitors that are participating in these data gathering exercises.
Okay, thank you. I would like to go back to William sometime and find out if he thinks there's not going to be an opportunity whether from these statistics or simply just talking to the people in the compliance group to get further information from ICANN. But right now, Marika's hand is up.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to note, because I had on my to-do list as well to contact the Ombudsman and our Registrar Liaison team, and I just wanted to report that the Ombudsman basically indicated that he refers all registrant complaints to the Registrar Liaison, but unfortunately that person has been on holiday, so I have not been able to get any feedback from him yet on this issue, but I hope to have that for the next call.
Okay, thank you. I don't know who MDP is.
That's police.
Oh, okay.
And if I can, Alan, if I can say one more thing.
Yes,
if people
Marika.
In Adobe raising their hands, once they have spoken, if they can please clear their status.
And Alan, could people please say their names when they speak, because it adds to the value of the transcript. Thank you.
There is nobody with their hand up yet.
Well,
Michael, were you trying to? Okay.
Yeah, and okay. I was... Michael Palage, and I was proactively listening to Marika, and I put my hand down before I got to speak. I was a good participant. I guess the question is, James, you know, we talk about the survey. Again, the registrars are the ones that kind of have the mother load of information here, so to speak. And I guess what we need to do is we need to put the survey out there, and what happens is they will either answer it or they will not answer it. And then we as a group need to take the data that we have, and we need to move forward. And then what ICANN, the ICANN institution, as well as the board needs to do, is as we, the group, come up with recommendations, whatever they may be, when those recommendations eventually go to the council or the board or whatever happens, if certain registrars come forward and start complaining, what the board needs to do is, did they ever take the time in the beginning of the process to participate? Because not doing something and then waiting to the last minute to object, that's really not consistent with the letter and spirit of how the bottom-up consensus-building process is supposed to work. So all we can do is try to gather information from those people that are willingly going to provide that information. If GoDaddy feels that answering a data point might provide some competitive advantage to a competitor in the marketplace. Obviously, one cannot compel one to answer it and would not expect you to, but those where you feel that you are just providing data to advance this, it would be welcome. And we will then take that data and move forward.
James, you wanted to get back in?
Yes, this is James, and I agree with you, Michael. I just wanted to point out that an alternative to a survey might be a research effort on the publicly available information that's on the various registrar websites. And for example, and I can post a URL, is that we actually have an FAQ on this very subject. You know, it's out there, it's on our public-facing website, and it explains the entire process. And I think that that might help address a lot of the information that you're getting at within your proposed survey questions, and it's something that doesn't require registrar cooperation. I mean, it's out there, it's in the public, and it's the same basis of information that a registrant or prospective registrant would use to make a decision of which registrar to take their business to. So,
I guess the question there, James, though, is it, you know, we can, you know, we can say ICANN or Marika go task somebody, or we the group can agree to do, you know, I'll take one, you take one. I mean, it just seems kind of, I guess what I don't understand is you had an FAQ where a lot of these answers may be able to be quickly gained. Just asking the registrars to do this, it just, I don't
okay,
understand
let,
why
let,
we
let,
have
let's
to do
not
so.
Try to make this a one-on-one debate. Michelle had her has hand up.
Michaela, do you hear me?
Yes.
Perfect. No, just coming back to this thing about the questionnaires. If the questionnaire were conducted in a semi-anonymous fashion with the data being collected by ICANN, and so that basically you'd have Registrar A, Registrar B, Registrar C, Registrar D, instead of GoDaddy, Enom, whoever, would that be something that people like Mason could live with?
It's Alan. I'll make a comment that I don't think we could do anything but have it, if not anonymous, certainly private. No registrar is going to say, I have thousands of complaints. Not in a public forum.
No, obviously not, Alan. I'm just...
So at the very least, it's going to have to be private. Whether it's also anonymous, we can decide.
Well, the thing is this, is that, okay, for a variety of reasons, GoDaddy is not going to share data with Black Knight. We're not going to share data with Enom, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, because apart from anything else, we really can't. However, ICANN as compliance team or whoever, which particular section within ICANN can be seen as being a neutral, disinterested party, which might make it more feasible. I don't know. I'm just throwing an idea out there.
Mm-hmm. Marika and William, is that reasonable that ICANN takes on that task if this group decides we need to do it?
I think we can definitely look into that.
Okay.
Agreed.
Okay, I think I'm the only one with a hand up now. I think one of the things we have to do is we do need a small group of people. I don't think we can do it in this meeting, but we need a small group of people to look over the questions that Michael started with and try to put some measure on are these the questions we really want to ask. Some of them, for instance, the question of what do you charge, I don't think is relevant to this group. Whether what they charge is made public and available to a registrant certainly will be relevant. But I would question whether we really need to know quantitatively if one registrar is cheaper than the other or not. So I think we need to go over that list and any other questions that other people provide relatively quickly, but in a small group offline, and review those. And anyone who's willing to work on that, I think we need to hear from. Is there anyone else who wants to talk about the data gathering effort at this point?
MDP has a hand up.
MDP has his hand up. Michael.
As I said, I will respond to James's discussion about price point and why I do think it is not totally irrelevant, that it does have some relevance to our discussion, but not on this call. I'll just do it off list.
Okay.
Or on list after the call.
On list. And there were a number of other comments also that perhaps we need to look at. All right, I'm happy to do on the list with whoever is willing to participate. I'm afraid it gets a little bit too complex when we have a large number of questions and then multiple answers to each of them. But let's give it a try. Siva?
Yeah, Mayor?
Yes.
Yeah, this exercise of gathering data, the survey of questions circulated to registrars, can it someway include resellers? Can it go beyond registrars and reach resellers? That is one point. And the other thing is, apart from gathering data from registrars, is there some way by which we can collect information about the range of domain name related disputes pending in consumer courts and other forums, and we make this exercise a little more comprehensive.
To what end, I would ask? Because we're really looking at a very narrow particular subject. I mean, we're not trying to fix all of the ills that may surround domain names.
That is not what I'm suggesting. Even narrowing down to the issue of post-expiry domain name recovery, is there some way by which we can gather data from sources beyond registrars?
Oh.
Can we go down to the level of resellers? Can we include registries to ask them what kind of complaints that they've been receiving? And can we also take a look at what kind of cases are filed in consumer courts, or what kind of issues are raised in lists?
Well, we can certainly ask registries if we choose. We can't ask resellers because at this point we do not effectively know who the resellers are.
Who they are.
Alan, can I get in the queue?
Sure.
I'm not online.
Okay.
It's Mason.
Okay. Go ahead.
Oh, okay.
You're on.
Okay. So are we or are we not going to look at resellers? Because I heard that come through loud and clear in Sydney.
I think my personal answer is we need to look at the concept of reseller. I don't know what the mechanism is by which we do it, since ICANN has no knowledge of resellers, and all we can do is either registrars who heavily use resellers tell us who a bunch of them are or something.
Yeah.
Again, as long as we're using self-identification, we're not likely to get the bad guys, but...
No, okay, that's fine. I wasn't clear on that.
I just don't know how to, you know, we have this brick wall between ICANN and resellers, and it's not clear how we address the issues.
All right, okay, that's what I wanted to know.
Shiva still has his hand up. I assume that's an old one. Is there anyone else who wants to speak on information gathering at the moment? We do need to continue this offline, and we have a spirited enough conversation going on now that I hope we will. No? Okay. The next item on the agenda was update on gathering of anecdotal information. Tatiana has given us an interesting document. Tatiana, do you want to talk about this a little bit? And then do we have anyone else with any other type of information that we can start talking about?
So I can assume of my information. First of all, our clients don't know a lot about life cycle of GTLD domains, and they need own information for CCTLD and GTLD domains. So it's very strange, but sometimes one client call us and ask why my domain is for other person in a 3 months after expiration date, so it's very, very anecdotal. And other problems are with our resellers too, because a lot of registrars send emails to resellers, not to end clients, and clients don't have full information about the expiration date, about his domain name, and what should they do in this situation. And of course, in Russia we have our own auctions and export services for domain names. So using the information about cctld.ru domain that it will be deleted after 30 days of expiration date, register or transfer, change owner for GTLD domains and make take orders for it and make auctions. So the GTLD domain don't have the life cycle, which is at ICANN website. I think it's the main information from my letter.
Okay. I have a question. If I heard you correctly, you said that in some cases registrars send renewal letters to the reseller and not to the registrant.
Yeah.
Is that because the information in who is shows the reseller as the owner?
No, I think sometimes yes, but in the main cases, registrars prefer to work with resellers because resellers put some signs for renewal domain, and they think that it isn't necessary to disturb their clients. As for RU Center, we prefer to make some emails about expiration date to our registrars directly. Directly.
Okay, so you're saying in some cases the registrar notifies the reseller and presumably expects the reseller to notify the registrant.
Yeah.
And perhaps they don't always do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Certainly, I think one of the things in that it would be useful, and I think that was in Michael's original list of questions, is to identify what the practices are among at least some of the larger registrars, and particularly those with resellers, because just, again, anecdotally talking to a number of the people, their practices are quite different in terms of at expiration, at what responsibility does the reseller take versus the registrar take. And I'm looking even at U.S.-based ones or North American-based ones, and the practices end up being quite different. So it might be enlightening to at least know what the registrar thinks the practices are within their own organization. And we may well find that they differ considerably from one to the other. So I think that's one of the things we need to discuss in talking about the questionnaire.
And I have one question more. The matter of fact that Russian resellers think that they can put any price for restore from redemption period domain as they wish. So this price is very big and different from the price of registrar. And for clients, it is easier to wait and try to catch the domain name again than restore the domain name from redemption. So the price is about €1,000, for example.
You say that the price varies, and you know the example you give of €1,000. Does it vary based on the particular name, or does it just vary based on which reseller?
It depends on if you work with reseller or with registrar. So for reseller, it is better to not to delete the domain name, but to sell it to the registrant. Because then he will go to this restaurant. So for redemption, they put a very large sum prices.
Okay, but the question I was asking is if for a particular reseller, do they fix the amount they will charge, or do they charge a different amount depending on how valuable they perceive the name to be?
It depends on the reseller.
Okay. So some do one and some do the other.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anyone else with any who has had the opportunity to try to collect any other information? I can give a couple of examples.
Alan?
Yes?
Alan, it's Paul Diaz. I've had
my hand
up in the queue forever in Adobe.
My apologies. Go for it. Paul and then James.
Yeah, Paul Diaz from Network Solutions. I wanted to echo something actually you said, Alan, in that based on our own experiences, I very strongly agree that you're going to find a very wide range of differences of experiences when it comes to resellers. And it's going to be very, very hard to sort of come up with sort of a grand statement about what's going on. I know in our own experience we have some resellers who very much want to maintain the customer relationship. And therefore, you know, our relation with the reseller is almost, think of it sort of as like a white labeling relationship. We remain behind the scenes, and all communication with customers is handled by that reseller. Now, what Tatiana was explaining, you know, with the notifications that are going out, they are sent, but, you know, we sort of have a point at which the reseller, as part of our agreement with them, then takes over. We don't have a lot of visibility beyond. One thing that I think is very important for this group to remember, though, is that with the new RAA in place and the extension of a lot of the requirements, data and notification requirements, as the work of this group goes on and those agreements and the requirements begin to come in force, you know, we may see or we should be seeing some change in behavior in the marketplace as well. Is those responsibilities are now spread explicitly spread beyond just registrars to resellers as well.
James?
Yeah, this is James, and I wanted to reiterate Paul's point relative to the new version of the RAA, and just to setting aside our earlier conversation and not trying to be difficult, but if the deliberations continue to discuss detailed pricing information, I think I would have to play it safe and drop off the call just because I don't want to get in trouble, and I certainly can't speak for the other registrars, especially those that aren't U.S.-based. But I just wanted to put that out there. If we could please not go into too depth of a detail of those comparisons. Thank you.
Anyone else who wants to talk about examples of, anecdotal examples of the kinds of problems one has experienced?
Should I raise my hand?
I don't know who that is.
It's McKaylee.
If you want to speak, you don't have to raise your hand. You're speaking. Go ahead with it.
Thank you.
I'll try not to mispronounce your name again, by the way.
That's quite okay. Everybody's allowed to make the mistake once.
I'm keeping tabs, and this is more than once for Alan.
Yeah, well, we'll forgive him. Tatiana's examples are pretty similar to the kind of things that we've seen as well, not just with GTLDs, but also with CCTLDs.
Mm-hmm.
One situation that we've had huge problems with was with companies that set up shelf companies, and what they tried to do is to register the domains in the name of the company that organizes the shelf companies, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And the problem then that arises, of course, is that I go along then to this company and I buy my limited corporation through them, and all the domains and things like that would end up still being held by this third party, and they're not too. It's not a particularly nice situation for the user to end up in. The other problem, which is a massive one, and it's not something that any of us is going to be able to solve overnight, is that no matter how many times we within the registrar community might send out notifications to end users to remind them to renew their domain names, so many of them will just ignore the emails completely or fail to update the email contacts that they have on record. And then they'll come back and try to make out that it's our fault that they didn't get the email, even because we're meant to know somehow using some kind of supersensory perception that they've changed their email address.
Yeah.
Or, you know, this. So, I mean, a lot of the complaints that I think people have with regards to domain deletions, expiries, and everything else, a lot of them could probably best be solved through more proactive education of users, but not, it's hard. I mean, we as in the registrar community can do a certain amount, but, you know, I think it's something that, you know, people in general need to work on. It's not something that we can do alone.
Well, it's an interesting situation regarding the email addresses, and I think it's one we do have to talk about. I was talking to a registrar who said they are so good, they even send out a mail after expiration to tell people they still have an opportunity. Unfortunately, if the gullible registrant has used their own domain as the email address, it's already been taken over by that time, and the mail never gets never goes to the recipient. So, you know, it's partly registrants who do stupid things, but the registrars are also somewhat compliant in some of this.
That's something which I think needs to be discussed more, to be perfectly honest.
Indeed, and let's face it, Glenn sent an email at the beginning of this meeting that I didn't get for quite a while. I've had ICANN emails that I never get. The email system is not the most robust thing in the world right now. And I think we have to acknowledge that and can't simply hide behind it. Okay, I have a couple of anecdotes that I'll put in email. I won't take the time to do it right now. Is there anyone else who wants to talk about anecdotal issues?
Sure, this is Garth Bruin again.
Okay.
We're actually documenting several situations where a so-called reseller is actually the registrar or run by the registrar. And we're putting together a report about that, and I think this just feeds into the general so-called reseller problem.
Okay. Is that something we'll see soon?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyone else with any comments on that general issue?
And I can add, Tatiana.
Yeah.
With email, sometimes company has own administrator for all domain names, and then he will change the work,
mm-hmm.
but leave his email in contact details for domain name. So the email is his, and the company doesn't receive letters about their domain names. Other problem with emails.
I don't think we're going to find any shortage of email-related problems. And I'm not sure, given that people sell domain names for $7 each, I'm not sure we're going to find a good replacement. We're not going to send FedEx notifications on these kind of things. But I think it's an issue we do have to look at. Is there anything we can do to make it somewhat better?
Mm-hmm.
All right, the next item is review of the public comment announcements. Marika, do you want to talk about that?
Yes, I'm just pulling it up on the Adobe Connect as well. I sent this out, I think, last week. Just for those of you that are weren't on the call the last time or are new to the group, the ICANN bylaws prescribe that a public comment period should be opened on initiation of a policy development process. Or the start of the policy development process. So to that end, I provided a draft text that could be allowed for this public comment period. And I just wanted to know whether you have any comments or suggestions for changes. A request was made to specifically ask for supporting data or information related to questions raised in the charter, and this has been called out here as well. So there were no comments on the mailing list, so I just wanted to check here whether anyone has any suggestions before we actually open the forum.
Yeah, it's Alan. I was negligent that I did look at it briefly but didn't comment. I do have a couple of comments that I'll put onto the mailing list within the next day or so. And may I ask that if anyone else has any comments that we get them in moderately quickly, so if necessary, Marika can do a revision and we can get this out. Perhaps within a week or so. Is that reasonable on everyone's schedule?
Yep.
Marika, if you don't see something from me within 24 hours, bug me, please.
Okay, I will do so.
I'm sure she'll give a similar notice to anyone else who needs the reminder.
Marika, could you resend that to the list, please?
Yes, I will do so.
Because my problem... I'm not too sure about others, but one of my problems is I get so much email that it's very easy for me to, I see something, think that I'm going to read it, but don't get a chance.
It's got to be on the top of the pile, hasn't it, Michael?
Oh, God.
I used to foolishly move things that required an answer but required thought into a separate mailbox, which I then never looked at again.
Keep it going.
Yeah. What I do try to do is put normally in the header if I want people to review something, to put it there, so hopefully people do take notice that it's not just a call detail or just another email, but so hopefully that does help people to focus on what they should review before a call.
Well, I'm currently looking at 26,000 unread emails, so...
that's all?
Yeah.
I have mine going back to 1980.
Mm. Oh, someone had a very long holiday.
I think I'd not want to look at my inbox if there was that many.
I don't. I put them away in other places. okay, the next item on our agenda was development constituency statement template. I recall a discussion on whether we should have one or not. I don't actually recall that we made the decision to do it.
That doesn't, can I just be in the queue, Alan?
Yes, please. I think you are the queue right now.
Okay. This is just to note that for some of the other working groups, because for those of you that are new to the process, part of the development of the initial report is a request to the different constituencies for their views on the issues. So some of the working groups in the past have decided to develop a template in which they ask different questions that they would like to get feedback on for the constituents so that can inform the group and as well, you know, help to shape the actual report. So the question for the group would be whether they would just like to put forward like the five charter questions or whether they would like to take the opportunity to maybe redefine or add some sub-questions where they feel the input from the constituencies might help to come, you know, to a better informed report.
I have a comment. Does anyone else want to go first?
I have a comment as well, Mike Pelage.
Oh, Michael, go.
Okay. I think it would be helpful to have some questions here because, I mean, the group, I would say the people on this group are coming to grasp with certain terms and concepts. So sending out some questions to help frame the discussion within these constituencies would be a good thing. So I do think sending out a questionnaire would be a good thing with,
yes,
with some questions.
Okay. I understand that doing it with a template and requiring it makes analysis easier. I also believe it limits the opportunities for expressing what they may feel. So I support a template or at least things that we want answers on. I would not want to limit it to those or restrict them, though.
Alan, just to maybe add, you know, from past experience, not all constituencies actually use a template. Some
Okay.
Some use the template or add things they want to add, or some, you know, ignore the template and just write a response. So, and I think most of them do see it as a template and feel, you know, they feel free to add or disregard it if they.
As long as we use words that support that concept as opposed to a mandatory template, I have no problem with it. What about content? Do we just limit it to the questions in our charter, or do we want to be a little bit more targeted than that? Of course, if we are targeted, we actually have to come up with the other questions or other issues. No opinion?
May I?
Sorry?
Yeah, this is Shiva. May I?
Yes, please.
Usually, when you send out a questionnaire, there must be some reluctance on the part of people filling in and documenting something. And it is also a long-drawn process for them to respond to a questionnaire. Instead, can we employ another method? If we can choose some registrars at random as a scientific sample and ask one of the staff members or the working group members to go and interview them or have an informal conversation with them over some of these issues and gather their reaction, and based on that, we can get a much better idea.
Okay, I think you're talking about registrars. I think what we're talking about now is the request for formal input from the ICANN GNSO constituencies. Now, one of those is registrars, and how they handle it within their constituency is their decision, but we're just looking at the formal call for input from ICANN constituencies, primarily GNSO, but normally we include the other supporting organizations and advisory committees as well. So this is a formal request, not a survey as such.
Okay.
How do we propose if we want to do something more than just the questions in the charter? And I think we do. How do we put together that list in a moderately quick time? Anybody still on the call?
The fact that nobody answers you in Pete Pats means no.
Well, my Adobe screen also just went blank, so I wasn't quite sure. The world has technologically come to an end.
That's just a shame.
I can't mute myself.
All right. Could I ask that anyone who wants to have input into what the template looks like, other than the specific questions in our charter, send them to the list again within, let's say, within the week.
And Alan, I'm happy to put that together
yeah.
into a template that we've used for other groups as well, or for the other groups as well. So,
okay.
And if no one puts anything out in the next few days, I can just put that out for comments so people can then just add to it so we can hopefully review that on the next call.
Thank you, Marika. And that's actually the subject I'd like to – was this call announced as an hour or an hour and a half? Marika, do you know?
I don't think we announced it.
Okay. Does anyone have any problem staying around for a little while more?
No, that's fine with me.
Okay.
Fine.
There was one more item on the agenda, and then we have another item that I omitted. I didn't ask Marika to put on the agenda, and that is the schedule of our next call. I'd like to actually do that one first, because 2 weeks from now, which is when our call normally would be, I will not be available. Does someone else want to take over the chair, or do we want to defer the call to another week? We can either do one next week or in 3 weeks, or both.
You want to do it, Matt? This is Mike Pelage. Considering that Marika said she wanted to get something out within a week, let's continue to leave you, and let's put that as a hard coat to meet and get that out instead of letting 3 weeks where some stuff will slip by. Just my suggestion.
I'm sorry, so you're saying maintain the meeting in 2 weeks?
Yep.
No, do it in a week. Because
in 1 week.
Oh,
okay, so actually have a meeting so we can come to closure.
Come to closure and put it out, and then in 2 weeks' time, perhaps we get some feedback from the constituencies instead of waiting, because if we don't do anything,
I fully support that, but I didn't want to impose upon people if other people's schedule doesn't allow it.
No, I'd like to do what that proposal
okay.
works for me.
So the next meeting will be 1 week from today, same time?
That's fine by me.
Okay. Now let's go
Glenn,
back to...
Let me just ask, Glenn, did you note that? Yes, Glenn. I'll make sure that Glenn has the details on...
Okay,
the
I don't think there's anything that's been conflicting with us, but if necessary, let us know and we'll do something.
Okay.
So at the same time, what is it, 19:30?
Yes, correct. Well,
18:30.
wherever you are, perhaps. Yes.
Yeah, 04:30.
I this one was 14. This one was 20:30 UTC. I think.
Yeah.
So it's 19:30 mine.
Yes, indeed.
I'm sorry. I'm totally self-centered. I don't care about other time zones. I get completely confused because I keep on dialing into calls an hour early or an hour late. So.
Okay, the only other item on our agenda is talking about the soul meeting, and I don't really think we've made enough progress at this point to try to focus on what that would be.
Yeah. Alan, if I can just make a point there. The reason why I put it there is that from a planning perspective, they've already started asking us to provide input on which meetings should take place when. So what I would like to know for now is whether there's any preference for a particular date and for a particular amount of time that should be allocated, so that at least we can block that time and then the group can decide whether it's either an update or workshop, a meeting, or you know, whatever shape or form it takes. But we just need to book in the time and place, basically. For
I have no particular vested interest in time or place, other than it would be nice if it doesn't conflict with either a GNSO schedule or an ALAC
yeah.
schedule.
Yeah.
An hour and a half or so, I think, will be sufficient.
Okay.
And I think you can take it as given we will have something to discuss, hopefully something good, but regardless, I think we are obliged to do something there. So there's no question in my mind about scheduling something.
Okay.
Just as long as it's not too early in the morning.
Which time zone are you talking about now?
I was
going
to say, are you talking about remote participation?
I'll physically be there, so that's fine.
Yeah, the problem is that's often when it doesn't conflict with anything when you do it early in the morning, but I'll do my best to find a good time.
If you do it early in the morning, if you do it very early in the morning, I'll be sending my apologies already.
Don't be jet-lagged anyway. You'll be awake at that time.
No.
Well, I would... typically, I would think Wednesday, which is when we had the last one, is a good day. Things are starting slightly to slow down by then. And if we can fit it in, I find Wednesday a good day, Wednesday afternoon after the GNSO meeting. But we'll leave it to you and your colleagues
okay.
to try to find a good slot.
Yeah, I'll look into that.
Is there anyone else, anything else anyone wants to add to the agenda at this point?
Cheryl here. No, Alan, I didn't want to add anything, but if people wondered why I had my hand up and took it down, I was simply going to say please really look at clashes when we're doing things. We definitely want the people who are interested in this being able to come to any workshop or meeting that's done on this topic.
Well, I assume it will go on to the formal GNSO agenda and at large agenda, and
yep.
both of us wearing
indeed.
Both of my hats, we'll try to be scrupulous.
Again, we need to know this sooner rather than
yep.
later. I'm all for keeping this as an agenda item and revisiting it again next week because soul creeps up real fast on people. And then we'll be fighting for not finding a space that's going to clash.
It's going to happen anyway. If nothing else, I thank you all. I think it's been a productive meeting. I think our challenge is to try to keep the inertia going between meetings right now. And Seoul is creeping up fast, and we would like to have something substantive to talk about. Not just that we've spent all of our time discussing how do we go forward without actually doing anything.
That was the entire point.
Sorry?
Just my sense of humor. Don't worry about
okay.
it.
Okay.
you can tell it's not early
that.
In the morning in Ireland, can't you?
Of course. I operate a lot better later in the evening.
Well, it's getting evening there.
Half eight in the evening. It's evening. One other thing that I think is important that we be careful with is not trying to cover things that aren't really relevant.
Yes.
I mean, try to keep it focused, because I think a lot of the discussions going backwards and forwards are very interesting, but it's possibly too easy to get bogged down in things that nobody's going to be able to change and aren't really relevant. So in some respects, defining what isn't relevant can probably help define what is. That makes sense to people.
It does make some sense. I think one of the things we got out of this meeting is there are increased people who are saying there are problems someplace around the world, even if we can't quantify them very much. And I think we need to come to closure on that issue, on whether we have sufficient belief there is a problem that we should be addressing or not, and not spend too much of our time revisiting that. Either we decide there isn't a problem and abandon the project, or that we go ahead and not continually question it. And I'm not trying to decide how we do that, but I think we need to do that within a short amount of time. So in comments on the list on how we come to closure on that quickly, and I think are needed.
I mean, what might also be relevant is to look at what the ESSAC, I think the ESSAC are working on something to do with high-value domains, which is quite relevant.
Okay.
It is. Good point.
Could you explain what you mean, Mike Plage? What do you mean high-value domains?
Well, they didn't really define that, which was one of the problems I had with what I saw from them.
Okay.
I mean, basically, I think, is James still on the call?
Or yes, I'm here.
I think you both, James and Mason, would know what I'm talking about. I think it was the ESSAC draft document on...
correct.
I think it was I can't remember the exact title, but it was to do with protection
domain hijacking, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's the most recent ESSAC report.
Right. So, Alan, it's Mason. Can you hear me?
Sorry, whoever's speaking broke up. I couldn't hear it.
Can you cue me? It's Mason.
Oh, yes.
You want me to go ahead?
I think you're next. I think you're on the list if you there's no one else with a hand up.
So, yes, the FSAC was looking into whether or not there were tech I don't know. I'm not sure how to boil this down. They were looking into whether or not there were technical holes in registrars that allowed hackers to come in and exploit registrar systems to the point where they could effectively steal a domain name and re-register it and then make it difficult to get back. And I had a discussion with Steve Crocker, the chair of the FSAC, in Sydney about it, and I don't believe I've talked with him since then, so I'm unaware of the current status. He asked for registrar input, which we gathered and provided. And I'm unaware of the status of the document right now. I'm sure he would be able to tell you. But when Michele was talking about that effort, I believe that's what you're referring to, right, Michele?
I think so, yeah. I mean, the reason I thought it was kind of vaguely pertinent was because it comes back again that, okay, for the it deals a lot with some of the contacts related to domains and where notifications are sent,
right,
et cetera, which is pertinent to the conversation we were having earlier.
Right.
I mean, part of the problem I personally had with the document and things that I saw was that it's, you know, where do you decide to draw the line? What is considered to be a higher value domain and all this kind of thing? Because it wasn't just pure domain hijacking that the guys were kind of focusing on, from what I can remember of the document.
Yeah, I'm not sure that was. I'm sorry, Mason here again. I'm not sure that was actually well defined. I think it. In fact, I don't want to speak for the FSAC, but I wonder if that was just a sort of a misnamed, or a badly titled document, because I'm not sure it really had so much to do with high value names as much as it just did. You know, how easily can a domain name be stolen by hacking into a registrar system?
Mm.
You know, regardless of what it would, you know, what you would pay for it, I guess, if you tried to, you know, fence a stolen good or something. I'm not sure. But to that point, you know, there are some parallel efforts going on in terms of what happens with domain names and how can they be if a registrant truly values a domain name in terms of its value to him or her or an organization. What are the responsibilities of the registrant to protect it? What are the responsibilities of the registrar to have a secure system? What are the responsibilities of anyone else involved in that equation? And I know that I was also contacted. I'm sorry, Alan.
No, go ahead.
You mind? Okay. So I was contacted separately by. Oh, shoot, Cheryl, you probably know who it is, but I've forgotten his name now, but he's in Australia. And
yes, I know all
involved,
that.
Well, just because he's been involved in the internet community so long down there. And he was interested in using the registrar channel to educate registrants about what to do to protect their domain names. So there's lots of this stuff going on left and right, and I'm not sure that they could be merged, even if they were appropriate to be merged, but... there is interest, I think, in educating end users to be more careful with their names and in seeing if registrars can offer additional protections for names.
Yeah, I mean, I think they all illustrate something that we all know. Domain names have value, and there are people who are willing to try to make money off of it, sometimes ethically, sometimes not. I don't think there's any surprise with any of that.
No, I mean, I think the thing that was of interest to me particularly was that, you know, in many cases, the registrant or the registrant organization, more correctly, might try to push the blame back to the registrar if the domain were lost. But in many cases, as already has come up on this call, the fault lies with the registrant organization not updating the contact.
Yes, there's no question about that.
So, I mean, I think, you know, that was what I saw as being a kind of an overlap in some respects. I mean, if they've got any actual real statistics or real data, it might save a certain degree of duplication.
And I think that's one of the reasons that the charter for this group included best practices as a possible outcome, because some of the things may not be in a position to legislate, but there are actions we can recommend which may make things better.
That's a good point.
I thank you all. Let's try to continue the momentum on the list, and we'll reconvene a week from now.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Alan.
Thank you. Bye-bye.